there! You are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming at KMUZ.org. This is where Marion and Polk Soil and Water Conservation Districts and OSU Small Farms Program shine a light on partnerships and programs that conserve our beautiful natural resources in the Willamette Valley. We're illuminating our collective mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences in the Willamette Valley.
I'm your host, Chelsea Blank, the Natural Areas Conservation Planner from Marion SWCD. On this episode, we are talking with Jacob Shockey from Project Beaver about our beloved furry keystone species and Oregon state mammal, the beaver. Have you ever wondered how to live with beavers? Well, that is exactly what we're going to help you with on this week's show. Hi, Jacob. Thanks for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So can you give us a little background on yourself and what brought you into the world of beaver restoration?
Yeah, I grew up in the Siskiyou Mountains at the bottom of our state, a place that Tacoma calls Sping, which means place of the beaver. But you wouldn't really call it a place of the beaver today. It's a similar landscape, rural landscape, as we have over much of the state, where waterways have collapsed into these single channel streams, and we have lots of ag, and you know, our salmon runs are having a hard time of it. And so I came back from school having studied to be a wildlife biologist and spent then close to a decade working on habitat restoration work, specifically focused around fish habitat and farms. And that naturally led to beavers because, you know, beavers do restoration work much better than I could. And my restoration projects were laughable compared to what these humble rodents were doing for free. So
yeah, no need to reinvent the wheel, right?
No need to reinvent the wheel. So hence my focus on beavers. I, you know, started focusing on what I could do to just help enable their good work rather than trying to emulate it.
Well, most people know a little something about beavers, but these animals are elusive. Could you introduce us to the features and habits that make beavers such remarkable creatures?
Yeah, so beavers are territorial. So they've got a little spot that they call home. The size of that territory seems to be dependent on how much food is there. So if food is sparse, they're going to have a bigger area that they spend time in. And if food is really abundant, it may be smaller. And they mate for life. So you're going to have mom and dad and then their babies. They have 2 to 4 babies a year, more or less. And those babies stick around for a year or two, too. So sometimes you can have as many as 12 animals in a family all living together. So we think about beavers as nocturnal. As you said, they're elusive. But an interesting thing there, it seems to be that prior to kind of widespread beaver trapping, beavers were out a lot during the daytime. And more or less the ones that survived were the ones that started working at night. So yeah, we don't see a lot of them now, but they spend a lot of time. So they're vegetarians. They eat the cambium layer, which is the kind of living green tissue layer off of trees and shrubs. But they also eat forbs and grasses and kind of your herbaceous plants as well. Mm-hmm. And they build dams, and they build dams to keep predators from eating them. They're very graceful in the water, but on land, they're very easy for predators to pick off. And so they spend a lot of time trying to add more water to the landscape so that they have more of an area to be safe. Mm-hmm. And so they're pretty famous for their dams. They don't live in their dams. Their dams are made of sticks and rocks and mud. Mm-hmm. And then they build a little home in generally in a dry bank. They'll build a den, or they'll build kind of that iconic beaver lodge that sticks up out of the wetland if they don't have a dry bank to get into. So they've got a cozy little spot, and it's got an underwater entrance tunnel so that big predators can't get in on them.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I didn't realize that they were so, quote unquote, elusive and nocturnal because of human impacts. Is what
yeah, that's the like. That's the hypothesis. They don't have eye shine. So like, you know, a deer, you shine a light at it at night and it reflects back at you.
Yeah.
That's because it has a reflective membrane in the back of its eye. Beavers don't have that, and their eyes have a lot of cones, which are to see color, versus rods, which are to see contrast. So it suggests that they're a daytime animal. But yeah, anymore, they're mostly out at night, and it's probably because of people. That's the hypothesis.
Yeah, and so you mentioned that their dams and their dens are different. Can you explain a little bit why they don't stay in their dams, and what is the dam for then if it's not for their home?
Yeah, so imagine their home is this cozy, dry little spot. It's a chamber, right? Where they have their babies, where they hang out when they're not out foraging. And you know, beavers are mammals. They breathe air. They spend a lot of time underwater, but they need a dry, cozy spot. Mm-hmm. And so they'll build that, like I said, either in a bank, or if they don't have a dry bank to get into, they'll have to build their own platform up out of the water. And that's what we call a lodge. Often they'll build this huge mound of mud and sticks, and then they'll dig a hole into it and carve out a little cavity to live in. The dams themselves are what regulate the water level over the entrance to their den. So they've got an underwater tunnel, but it only stays underwater if beavers keep the dams up. And so they'll build dams downstream of their underwater tunnel, and that basically keeps their door shut to predators. So often there'll be kind of a main dam that they care a lot about, because that's the one that regulates the water over their tunnel entrance. If that dam breaches, right, then their tunnel is exposed to animals that might be able to come in and eat their babies. And then they'll build dams out across the landscape too, to help safely access willow or whatever trees that they're looking to eat too. They also spend a lot of time digging. And so people don't necessarily focus on the digging, but they dig canals out into the land as well. These like sometimes 2 feet deep, even these canals that'll branch out, and they'll kind of quietly motor out to where they're harvesting trees in their canal, and they can float their logs back into the pond on those as well.
Oh my gosh, that is really interesting. They're smart and cute, the full package.
The full package, yeah. They also cause people lots of trouble. So
right. We have a right. Controversial. Yes. Well, beavers have played an important role in shaping North America, both ecologically and economically. So can you provide a brief history of beavers of pre-European times to present day?
Yeah, so beavers have been building dams and really stewarding fresh water in North America, but really the entire northern hemisphere of our planet, since before humans emerged from Africa, I mean, for millions of years.
Oh,
and
wow.
In fact, we as a species emerged into a landscape where beavers were already building out of clay and sticks.
Wow.
They were the mammal that were building houses out of clay and sticks before we were.
Oh my gosh.
And we emerged into a landscape where all the waterways were managed by beavers. And so, you know, if you imagine like a stream that we think about today, that's very much something humans have made, this mm-hmm. single channel of water, this stream, mm-hmm. if you will, streaming water off the land mm-hmm. to the ocean. A waterway under beaver management looks really different. It looks kind of like a sponge mm-hmm. of connected ponds. And a lot of the trappers that first came to North America from Europe, their maps would show that. They would talk about trying to cross one of our valleys and spending days and days trying to find a beaver dam that was strong enough to run their horses across, because the entire valley bottom was just this verdant sponge of green wetland.
Wow.
And so it looked very different than it does today. And North America, beavers were really the first resource that was extracted en masse. And the pilgrims were sending back beaver pelts, and Western expansion was funded by beaver pelts. And many of our biggest cities, like across the Pacific Northwest, were founded on beaver pelt trading forts.
Oh, my gosh.
Beavers have really dense underfur that makes really good hats if felted. And so that stovetop hat, the Abe Lincoln style hat, is a beaver hat, and it works really well for keeping your head warm and the rain off. And yeah, the millions and millions of beavers that were in North America turned into hats. And so then since that time, beavers really went from a natural resource that folks were extracting to a pest species, because they like to plug culverts and, you know, eat people's ornamental trees. And I think now there's been a shift, and we're realizing that we really need to defer to the stewardship of beavers again for our waterways. Beavers do things like clean water, store water, sequester carbon, build resilient habitat, build habitat that's resilient to fire. And all of these things they do for free and better than we can do it. And so there's kind of this pivot back to beavers as a natural resource again. When the white trappers came over and were trying to convince the people who lived here to trap beavers, those tribes who lived in areas where they were prone to drought were much more reluctant to get on board with the beaver trapping and would push back against it and say, no, the beavers need to be here or we run out of water.
Yeah. So they could see directly the benefits from the beavers in the landscape.
Yeah. Indigenous folks have known it for as long as they've been here. And, you know, it was a different sort of mentality that came in and kind of allowed that clean sweep. But we're finding our way back to understanding we need to defer a little bit to a rodent, which, you know, takes a certain amount of humility, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. We're kind of trying to reconcile our relationship with beavers. I mean, it sounds like we've used them for so much and they've inspired so much. And then we didn't appreciate them until recently. So there's a lot of time to make up for.
Yeah. Although in the scheme of things, as a species, as humans, most of our time has been spent coexisting with beavers. It's really just this last 3 or 4,000 years where we seem to have forgotten. But if you think about kind of hunter and gatherer humans, beaver wetlands are where all the wildlife is.
So looking through the Project Beaver website, there are so many amazing resources for educating folks about the importance of beavers and their role in shaping our landscapes, as you talked about. So can you talk more about what Project Beaver is and how the organization works to support beavers?
Yeah, Project Beaver is a nonprofit that we started to empower humans to partner with beavers and value their works. That's our mission statement. You know, nonprofits are a tool. You have an idea around something that would be useful in the world, and a nonprofit is one way to try to get there. And so Project Beaver is just that. It's a tool for helping to empower folks, you know, folks who are struggling with coexisting with beavers, folks who are interested in trying to bring beavers back onto their land. And yeah, like you said, we have a bunch of resources.
Yeah, I think it's definitely useful.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting. To all of our listeners out there, if you have a moment, please go explore the website. There's so many awesome resources and information that I never realized about all the methods of trying to kind of emulate or assist the benefits that beavers provide for landscapes. You are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org. I'm your host, Chelsea Blank, and today I'm talking with Jacob Shockey of Project Beaver. So one thing that caught my attention on your website were the beaver coexistence tools. So what are those and why are they important and how can people use them?
So beaver coexistence is kind of this idea of when human habitat and beaver habitat may clash, what are some of the moves that we can do so that the beavers can stay and the people are still happy? And generally speaking, it's because both beavers and people like low gradient areas along streams, and people have this habit of building roadways, which are kind of like dams, and sometimes they cross waterways, and we leave this one hole for the water to get through, which we call a culvert. And beavers see that and they're like, well, the people built a pretty good dam, but they left one hole, and if we plug that hole, we'll get a really nice beaver pond. And that causes no end of grief with the humans. That is one of the situations that we're looking to trick beavers basically out of plugging at a culvert. And there's a number of different devices called flow devices where you can basically trick a beaver into thinking it's either plugged the culvert or the culvert's inaccessible. And then the other suite of coexistence solutions are really those focused around what beavers eat. So if you have an apple orchard or a filbert orchard next to a waterway, beavers are likely to come rambling up and start chewing on your trees. And so there's various strategies like simple electric fences that can keep beavers out of your orchard. Or if you have ornamental trees and you live along a river and you don't want, you know, your Japanese maple being cut down by a beaver, there's ways to protect your trees. Caging off a plant is really the most effective. And you can use just the simple welded wire you'd buy at the local hardware store. 2 inches by 4 inches wrapped around. And if you go on our website, we've got a little sheet that describes out a good way to do that. Another option, if you don't like the look of cage, is you can mix latex paint and clean dry sand together and kind of whip it up into a slurry and paint that on the bark of a tree. And beavers, because they really care about their teeth, when they start to bite through that rubberized sandpaper, it grinds away at their incisors, and it can be a pretty effective deterrent. Yeah, the cool thing about doing beaver coexistence, from my perspective as a wildlife biologist, is that every site where beavers and humans are coming into conflict, if we can help people live with beavers rather than trap them, then that's one more family of beavers that are contributing to the habitat for fish and wildlife. But another thing beavers do is they literally move tons and tons of vegetation, plants, from the sides of the streams down into the water. And what that does is more or less drive the entire food web. Even on river systems where beavers aren't building dams, they're still creating these tangles of sticks. You know, sometimes I call them river reefs because they're so teeming with life. If you go snorkel up to them, that's where that's where all the life is, right? Protecting trees can be one of the best things we can do to keep beavers cycling nutrients in our streams and building the habitat for the rest of. Because remember, beavers have been managing waterways for millions of years. Well, all the fish, all the birds, all the wildlife has come to expect beavers in control of water. And it's only recently that people have been in control of water. And, you know, it's not working out so well for some of the species. So, yeah, the most helpful thing we can do as humans is to kind of ensure that the beavers stay.
What would you say to landowners who want to get rid of the beavers on their property due to the undesirable damage to infrastructure, plants, flooding issues, things like that?
Well, I get a lot of those calls from folks who have beavers, and usually it's because the beavers have just moved there. Generally speaking, folks are unaccustomed to what beavers bring to their land, and you know, the people see themselves as good stewards of the land, and they're wanting to make sure that this new neighbor isn't going to be harming the land itself. I mean, beavers are cutting down trees. Isn't that bad? Right. And until last year, the state of Oregon classified beavers as a pest and a predator. So people have taken that to heart, and they kind of see it as like, to be a good steward of this land, I probably need to get rid of this pest. Generally speaking, there's a way to coexist with beavers, whether it's some piece of infrastructure that can't be flooded or concerns around trees. I very seldom come to a site where really the constraints are so tight that we can't figure out how the people and the beavers can inhabit the same space. That's very, very rare. In those cases, you can always move the beavers. It's little bit tricky because they're a family, and so you have to move them all together. So you kind of trap them over the course of 2 weeks and keep them in a holding facility, and then you can move them to a spot where, you know, maybe beavers were trapped out 100 years ago and they still haven't made it back.
And just kind of changing the narrative from, like you said, from a pest or a predator to this is something that can really help the landscape. And
totally, yeah, I mean, your property is richer ecologically, it's more wealthy if there's beavers there, you know. And we're not hunter-gatherers anymore, but if we were, your land would be more valuable as a place to be a human.
So speaking of pest predatory kind of status on beavers, recently House Bill 3464 was passed, which actually removes beavers from their predatory status, according to ODA. So can you speak to what the implications of this change might be and how this might affect beavers and farmers?
Yeah, so like you highlight, it went from an ODA rule, and now they're classified as fur bearers. So they are under the jurisdiction of ODFNW. So rulemaking still has to happen. That bill, the law went into effect, I guess January 1st, but there hasn't been the clarity around the rules yet. What it'll require, though, is that if you want to kill beavers on your property, you're going to have to reach out to your local ODFNW regional biologist. And you're probably going to have a conversation around, well, did you try to coexist with them first? So ODFNW will now be issuing permits, because the thing with removal is, remember, they're territorial. If you take out one family, another family is just going to move back in that opening, right? And you take that family out, well, another one will move in. I'm optimistic that 3464 will be great, because landowners will start reaching out to ODFNW. ODFNW will be providing landowners with coexistence options. Most landowners don't even know that there's options for coexisting with beavers. They've called ODFNW at one point in the past, and ODFNW told them, well, you have one tool and it's called trapping, and they haven't really tried anything else. And so I think there's an opportunity here to try another tact. And toward that end, there's actually a bill being heard by the House on House Committee on Climate Change on February 5th that would set aside $1.5 million for supporting landowners coexisting with beavers.
Oh,
And so, kind
wow.
of following up on that, it would be block grants to SWCDs and watershed councils and nonprofits, so that you would have capacity to go chat with landowners, so that landowners could get pond levelers and electric fencing installed without a crazy cost burden on them. And so there's still movement to continue kind of the momentum behind 3464 with this new bill. I think it's 4014. I think we're looking at some of the struggles we're having with drought, and we're realizing that we need help where we can get it, and in this case, we should defer to the professionals.
Well, I've heard of the annual State of the Beaver Conference, and that local organizations are coming together to work on a Mid-Willamette Beaver Partnership. So, can you talk about some of these collaborative efforts, and how is your organization getting involved?
State of the Beaver Conference was probably one of the first dedicated events that really helped folks gather. It's an international conference of beaver scientists that is held right here in Oregon in Canyonville. Folks from all over Europe and Canada and the US come together and gather and share strategies and tactics around helping humans and beavers coexist. So yeah, Project Beaver, we're kind of playing in that world. We are based in the Rogue Basin. So we really have roots here. We have a conservation property here where we're working on building a beaver boardwalk, so people can actually come and experience what a beaver wetland is like
Oh,
firsthand.
cool.
And then, sort of zooming out from that, we're trying to be helpful at local levels and then state levels and across the broader northern hemisphere as well. So we're kind of finding those little niches where we might be helpful.
Are there any other thoughts you would like to share about beavers?
I would just encourage people who are listening to go see if they can find the beavers in their local waterway. I think you'll be surprised. It's kind of fun. It's like the big charismatic wildlife that you can actually spot, because they leave sticks everywhere that they've chewed on and skinned. And so yeah, if you're interested in beavers, go see if you can find the beavers in your local area, even if you don't have them on your own piece of land. I think that's a good first step for folks, and then you can start kind of learning about them from there.
Well, we've gotten to our last question that we ask each of our Conservation Spotlight guests, which is, what is one action you would encourage people to take in relation to the work you do?
Oh, I think it would be that. Go find some beavers in your area. If you're inspired, kind of keep an eye on them too. Move on beyond kind of a trapping, a first approach to beaver problems with trapping. So we've got a bunch of tools on our website too, if you're looking to advocate for your local beaver population and you know, reaching out to your local county, your public works departments, and both inquire about kind of their approach to beavers and seeing if you can help provide them some resources is a really good strategy. This kind of thing happens at a grassroots level, and so the beavers in your area, you're their best advocate.
Yes,
and if you have beavers on your land and you're struggling with them too, you can always reach out to us as well. We're happy to help if there's a tricky problem that you're having a hard time solving.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. Definitely get outside, get within the natural areas and get to know them. And, you know, once you see a beaver in action or even just hanging out, you know, relaxing, that's the first step to kind of inspiration and getting excited about conservation. So
totally. There's lots of inspirational videos online, but get off YouTube and get outside and you'll have a much more interesting experience.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I've been talking with Jacob Shockey about living with beavers, and I am your host, Chelsea Blank, the Natural Areas Conservation Planner for Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. Thank you for taking a few minutes to share the light with us. We are grateful for a community of conservation-minded folks who know the importance of partnerships. If you would like more information on this topic, please visit our website for more follow-up information. I'd also like to mention that Winter Wildlife Field Days is happening all month long in the Mid-Willamette Valley. Everything is free and accessible during this bilingual series of nature adventures. And attend our first Friday talk on April 5th to learn about the upcoming City Nature Challenge and how you can participate. All this and more can be found on the Marion SWCD website at www.marionswcd.net. If you liked what you heard here on the Conservation Spotlight today, tune in on the third Wednesday of next month to KMUZ at 100.7 or 88.5 FM at 8 a.m. during Willamette Wake Up. Thanks for listening and keep your light shining.